101.5, The Valley's Music Place, building community.
Good morning and welcome to Community Conversations, our in-depth conversations with some of the most interesting people here in the Roanoke Valley. Brought to you by Carilion Clinic, and of course live here in the studio with me for Community Conversations, the newest executive director for the Grandin Theater, located in the Grandin Village, as opposed to located in Salem, because that's just darn confusing, Ian Fortier.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Thank you for coming out, brother.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the new gig, by the way.
I appreciate it. It's an honor to be associated with that facility and to be able to go into it every day and get a sense of its history and its excitement and enthusiasm.
Sweet. What were you doing before then?
For the last 4.5 years, I was working at the Jefferson Center Foundation, so right up on Luck Avenue, and participating in some high-level performing arts production and some community productions. And my job over there was director of patron services, so I really had a hand in making sure that everybody's experience from when they decided to purchase a ticket to when they actually sat in their seat was one that was positive and worthwhile.
It seems almost like a hospitality industry-driven kind of thing.
A little bit, yeah. I think, you know, one of my professional strengths has always been personal relationships. So I think more and more, especially in a town the size of Roanoke, you know, a city the size of Roanoke, and a city that continues to evolve based on relationships. It was really advantageous for me to work at the Jefferson Center because when I came to town, I got to start there, which is a very high-level organization. You know, everybody in the community comes into that facility, whether they're there to see a show or visit one of the host organizations. So to be associated with that upon my arrival to Roanoke was really advantageous and I think very lucky as well.
Now, given, you know, the term executive director is such a broad scope because you could be the executive director as long as you have plumbing skills, depending upon where you work.
Right. You know. Or you can get a card printed up on VistaPrint.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I am the executive director of nothing today.
That's right. Exactly. That's right.
Yeah, I'm the master of my own driveway.
That's right.
So for the Grandin Theater especially, you know, it stretches beyond just basic theater operations. What does being the executive director for the Grandin necessarily entail?
Well, I think this is a great question because it helps us early on distinguish that the Grandin Theater isn't the actual structure, but it is run by the Grandin Theater Foundation. So when the overhaul of the theater took place in 2001, some community members, I think Ed and Catherine Walker, were very instrumental in helping to create this nonprofit foundation, from which that point on, the theater would be operated as a nonprofit, which would give it the ability to generate revenue, ask for sponsorships and donors, you know, donors that were tax-free to be able to create that model. So in this particular context, the executive director role is approached from the nonprofit foundation point of view. So my responsibility is not only all the wherewithal involving operations, but it also has to do with running a nonprofit, which is, I think, one of the reasons that made me a good candidate for the position, because I'm a 20-year professional in the nonprofit world.
So you came basically, though, sort of like basically from relations necessarily and also dealing with production aspects. But oftentimes, don't executive directors get sort of pigeonholed into, I'm basically head of sales?
That can happen. There is a fundraising component expectation to this job, and I think that's one of the reasons why it was interesting to me, because to me that's an opportunity, again, to build those relationships in a town that's continuing to progress, a city that's continuing to progress based on these excellent relationships of these progressive organizations that are growing. I think the paradigm that we live in now is very much oriented towards connecting community dots, as opposed to being an isolated island where you would have an idea and you would resource it yourself and you would go out there and it would either succeed or fail. I think since the last economic depression, now more organizations are relying on each other to connect those dots and use each other's resources to create that. So I think from an executive director point of view, that financial component and going out there and building those relationships, it's an important part of the job. And I look forward to it once I get my sort of arms around operation.
Yeah. So explain to me a little bit. We talked a little bit beforehand about the importance of the fact that the Grandin, unlike being sort of a saved theater, has done in many, many towns, and just like, oh, well, there's a nostalgia factor, and we get to see the occasional movie we don't get to see anywhere else. But obviously, the Grandin has a much greater component overall as it's a, I don't know, its relation to the community at large.
Enormous. And that's one of the things that we're going to work on. So when you think about that building, it's a geographic, a historic, and a cultural anchor for that community. A community that you and I were talking about earlier has seen worse times than it has now. I mean, it's stood there for a long time while that community has not seen the kind of success and the kind of neighborhood relations and occupancy that it has now. So one of the things that's really important is to put our arms around that the Grandin, a lot like the Jefferson Center, is a lot more than just a place to go see a movie.
Yeah.
It's a cultural center. It's a community anchor. It's an economic driver. And by all auspices, it needs to be, in my opinion, and I think the board's opinion as well, a multi-use facility. There's simply so much more that can be done with the building than running a first-run film. So that's one of our challenges, is to figure out how we can continue to be obligated to Hollywood for running the films the way that we need to, because we're a first-run movie theater. So we have restrictions, but also at the same time building in these community events that bring people into the building for reasons that are other than watching films, whether it's a business meeting during our dark hours or a special event or a birthday party. These type of things are things that we're looking at because they help us to, you know, diversify our revenue stream, make the organization more solid, and involve more people from the community.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't remember that. I remember seeing Bill Murray. Bill Murray doesn't do much stand-up very much.
What about Bob?
But
he came in.
I remember, yeah, Bill Murray actually goes on stage and actually does 45 minutes.
Sure.
You know, I remember, I think one time the Agents of Good Roots, who had been signed to CBS Records, who had two of the members from Roanoke, just decided, let's do a concert. Where should we go? The Grandin Theater, why not? Most of the guys were from the neighborhood. They said, let's do it.
Sure. You know, John Lee Hooker's played there.
Yeah.
The Dead Kennedys have played there.
Yeah.
You know, and I've had some. One of the, I tell you, I'm in my first month. I've probably been doing it for a little over 4 weeks now. And Rob, every day, literally every day, I meet somebody, at least one person, who has this story associated with them in that building.
Yeah.
I kissed my girlfriend for the first time in the balcony, or the first date for me and my husband was at the Grandin Theater, or we got married there, or I remember seeing the Dead Kennedys and tearing the place apart, you know, or Rocky Horror. You know,
Rocky Horror.
It just keeps going, you know, and so you know, you look at this, and there's so much in favor of making this organization even better than it is, because everybody has this invested nostalgic stake in it. And I think one of the tricks and challenges for myself and the board is to try to capture these experiences, these wispy and ephemeral memories, and in some way structure them, either, you know, put them on the website or give people the opportunity to profile themselves or tell their story. Because to me, there's a really rich resource in that. I'm not sure what the end is, but certainly the path of being able to let people to participate in that nostalgia is something that's hugely valuable. I don't know how. I just know that it is.
The Grand, it's an interesting also, you know, when you think about it, you don't have a huge staff. I mean, you have a board, but you don't have a huge staff. And what I find very fascinating about the Grand, when you talk about it from a cultural standpoint, is that is everything from I am an expert at my field, this is where I want to be, to this is my first job.
It's really interesting. It's challenging. Everybody that works for me is part-time. And part-time staff situations can sometimes be challenging because individuals are thinking more about how much they get paid for an hour as opposed to whether or not they're invested in the organization and mm-hmm. they receive benefits and they're, you know. So that kind of structure is an interesting one. So my job is to make sure that everybody feels comfortable about being there, feels comfortable about coming into the building, giving us their time. But also it's my job to make sure that there's professional development aspects to what they do. Like you said, I have, you know, three or four individuals who it's their first job.
Yeah.
They're straight up teenagers that work up the street at Patrick Henry. They love the theater. They love theater in general. They're huge fans of film. And they come and they participate. And they may not have ever had any experience in the professional world. And it's sort of my job to be able to guide them into how a business operates, how an arts and cultural nonprofit operates, and prepare them for whatever comes next. I need to make sure that when these individuals end up leaving, which they will, on to bigger and better things, their education, some of them will stay in town, some of them will leave town, but that they're prepared and they've had an actual, strong, working, functional, diverse experience at an arts and cultural nonprofit.
You've had an opportunity to sort of walk into a place that has just recently undergone a huge technological upheaval.
Yes.
Yes. And yes. Yeah. So has that made your life a little simpler?
You know, I will be the first person to sit here and tell you that I excel in front of technology, not behind it. When you turn the screen around and I look at that bee's nest of wires, I start to get actual concerns about whether or not I'd ever be able to understand it. I definitely am stronger in front of a monitor and in front of a projector than I am behind them. What I do know, and I asked these questions in the vetting process when I was working with the board, is that the Grandin Theater is very strong from a capital point of view right now. We do have capital needs, but we did just go through this upgrade where we switched from the 35-millimeter film reel projectors to the digital projectors, which, you know, was the norm that had to happen nationwide in order for us to incorporate this new technology. So there are four of them in there, and they're humming, and they're these giant machines, and they have all these sorts of lights and cables, and I've got a guy that tells me how things are going, and we make sure that we protect them, and we condition them correctly with air, and that we secure the rooms that they're in, and I think it's a lot easier. I don't have a lot of experience with 35-millimeter film and old reels, but I can imagine that that was a lot trickier to do. You know, if something was happening that was problematic with the film, or you had to make the changeovers and all that sort of stuff. So to learn that side of it's going to take a while for me, and I try to fit it in when I'm doing the other things that I need to be doing. But it's a good place for us to be. I mean, a lot of independent theaters, I think nationwide, weren't able to make that transition. The organization a couple years ago in 2012 rallied really hard to raise the funds for us to be able to do that. So with new projectors, a solid roof, a great HVAC system, the building's in really strong shape. We do have capital needs, though, that we need to focus on. We need new doors. We need new POS systems. We need new computers. So we have stuff that we need to upgrade to make the business operations better. But I feel really good about where we are from a projection point of view.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Ian Fortier, who's the new executive director for the Grandin Theater. When we come back, we're going to talk about some ideas that he possibly has in the future as to what he would like to see and how it evolves, and also bring it back to the idea of possibly doing more live shows at the Grandin Theater as well, on top of first-run movies. And, of course, we're going to be talking about a really great event he's got coming up later on in the month that we'll tell you all about here on Community Conversations. Right now, it's Cracker. Turn on, tune in, drop out. 101.5, The Valley's Music Place. Cracker, turn on, tune in, drop out. 101.5, The Valley's Music Place. Part two of our community conversation with Ian Fortier, who is the new executive director for the Grandin Theater. Thanks again for coming out. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure to be here. I'm a big, big supporter of this radio station.
We appreciate you, brother. Let's get right to it, man. You have an event coming up, and I believe it is this month. Very soon, in fact.
I do, actually. It's a week from Saturday. It's October 18th down at the theater. In my very first, week, actually before I started working, after the announcement that I would be there, I was approached by a couple community members, about this documentary created by a young couple that live up in Northern Virginia, Megan and Aaron Troy. And the documentary is about the explosion of the Virginia craft beer movement, in the past couple of years, based on a piece of legislation that passed in Richmond in, I think, early 2012. Uh-huh. So the documentary is called From Grain to Growler, and it really documents the history of how the early craft brewers in Virginia were working really hard to create this industry, and then how this piece of legislation opened it up for all sorts of new craft brewers to come along. And we've really experienced this explosion in the Commonwealth in the last couple of years, to the point where Virginia is now the number four craft brewery state in America. So to be mentioned in the same conversation with Colorado and California and Oregon is definitely an indication of explosive growth. The film itself, I think, captures that kind of growth, and it allows us to to examine something that's truly an actual movement that's happening. The reason why we decided to screen the film is because they let us do it solely at the Grandin. It's a one-time showing, and we got to build this event around it, where we're actually inviting six breweries from Southwest Virginia to come and participate. They're all going to have sort of tasting sampling tables for the first hour. We're going to show the documentary after that, and then afterwards we've got a panel of about 5 to 6 individuals, diversified individuals through the business. So we've got a distributor of craft beer here locally. We have a couple of the brewers. We have Martin Keck, who is the new owner of the Barrel and Chest Bottle House out on Electric Road, and then the filmmakers themselves. So it's a type of event that we'd like to see at the Grandin. When I talked earlier about having those multi-use facility and doing events that were not just first-run films that came out of Hollywood, but also doing things that involve the community, this was our opportunity to put our arms around something like that really early.
Why am I not surprised that there's such an explosion of craft beer in a region of the country in which everyone's grandfather knows how to make a still? Why does that not shock me at all?
From the ground up, grassroots alcohol distilling seems to be something that's very, very strongly rooted in Southwest Virginia.
Yeah, I was going to say, somebody making homemade booze in Roanoke? No.
Yeah.
Actually, it's really interesting. I don't know that you knew this, but one of the very first homebrew supply stores ever in the state was actually in the Grandin Village.
I did not know that.
That little shopping center right directly behind the theater, that was the very first homebrew store.
Right across from Micmac.
Yeah.
I did not know that at all.
In the early 1990s, it used to be called Roanoke Homebrew Supply, and it was the very first one ever.
How about that? Maybe that's somebody I need to track down to have them come on over to the event. But we're really excited about it. We're featuring some of the best breweries in the area. Devil's Backbone is going to come down from Lexington, and we've got Frank Moeller from Flying Mouse up in Troutville. They're coming down from the mountain. KS Mountain Brewery is coming down. Wendy and Joe Halleck from Callaway, Virginia. It wouldn't be an event if you didn't have Kino and Leslie Snyder's beer featured. So Parkway is going to be in the house from Salem. And then we have our two newest breweries, which are both Roanoke City-based breweries that are going to be participating as well. Steve Swallow is coming out from Soaring Ridge, which is located at the corner of Shenandoah and 5th. And then Brian Summerson is brand new. I think he's in his first month as our newest nano brewery, the Big Lick Brewing Company, which is located at the corner of Salem and 2nd. In what I'm starting to dub it, and I'm going to take credit for this because I'm starting to dub it, we sort of have a beer district.
Yeah.
We kind of have this beer district that's growing in Roanoke. You know, if you think about, this regionally recognized tap house in Blue Five, which is right there on 2nd, mm-hmm. two blocks down on Salem and 2nd, you have the Big Lick Brewing Company. If you go up two blocks on Salem, you've got Beamer's 25, which is a growler house.
Yeah.
You turn the corner onto Shenandoah, a block and a half away, the Soaring Ridge, their new brewery. And if you wanted to cross over the bridge into Wasina, you could stop by the Wasina Tap House and West and Doug's place. So you see this sort of geographic area, this sort of beer district that's gelling in downtown West. And I'll be the first to drop a flag and stake that claim.
That's good. Other people from economic development need to take heed.
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, now it's a really nice place, because back in the 90s, my mom's like, don't go down there.
Right.
Don't get caught.
Well,
down
being
there.
An out-of-towner, I've heard the stories of Salem Avenue, and now you think about individuals that are going down there to enjoy a very strong, very well-put-together, locally-made craft beer. And I think that's important about the craft beer industry. It's more of a quality industry. It's not a quantity industry. It's not about consumption. It's about enjoyment. And that's, I think, one of the things that we're trying to capture. 2 years ago, all of these organizations didn't exist.
Yeah.
Only Devil's Backbone.
Yeah.
So Chaos and Parkway and Soaring and Big Lick and Frank Moeller in Troutville with Flying Mouse, they didn't exist.
Yeah.
So it really talks to, and the documentary talks to that. It really speaks towards the growth and the future growth that could be coming as well. So.
Well, it's really kind of taking the business model from the wine industry, right?
Well, that's what it was. I mean, this legislation that passed in 2012 essentially gave these brewers on-premise sales abilities. Yeah. So they weren't relying at all on having to handle their overhead and then make their money on distribution. It allowed them to open up the doors, have people visit them, be able to sell on site using that wine model. And that's what makes these organizations economically feasible. So these breweries now can operate and sustain themselves due to visitation.
Yeah.
And once that legislation was passed, it really gave them that opportunity to grow. And we expect in the Commonwealth, I was talking to the filmmakers, and once you see the film, they talk a little bit about the numbers, but they expect continued exponential growth in this industry.
It just makes sense because Virginia ABC has always lumped beer and wine on the same category anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, right.
So to me, it almost seems like, why did they even need legislation for it? The ABC regards it as almost the same thing.
I just think that it took the Commonwealth a little while just to catch up and making sure that they were the same.
Yeah.
And they'll continue to head in that direction, from what I understood from the brewers. But this particular movement has so many undertones that are worth talking about as well, which is one of the reasons why we put our arms around the film. You know, you're talking about job creation. You're talking about job retention. You know, you don't outsource brewers. You don't send them, you don't send them to Asia.
Yeah.
They stay here because you need them here. You're talking about agricultural development, relations being built between brewers and the individuals who are actually growing hops and barley and the ingredients needed for beer. You're talking about recreation opportunities. Frank Moeller and Flying Mouse is near the AT. You know, they have a brewery that that has part of their model capturing individuals who go out to recreate for the day and then end up at the end of the day stopping by to try some of their beer.
Fantastic. Just joining us, Ian Fortier, from the new executive director of the Grand Theater. Sorry, I was in my head's in four places all of a sudden. We're actually running out of time here. Are there volunteer opportunities at the theater as well?
You know, we're working on developing a volunteer program right now. We do have some opportunities. Jamie Beasley, who's the single greatest asset the organization has, she's been there for a long time, started as a volunteer. She's now our director of operations and one of our projectionists, and she's sort of a right-hand staff person. She kind of handles that. We have opportunities for ripping tickets, helping us clean the facility to keep our cleaning costs down, and participating. So any volunteer can come and can give us a shout out if they have an interest. We actually have something on the website. We also have a new website coming in early November that's going to be this very dynamic opportunity to interact with the organization. You'll be able to buy tickets online, make donations online, buy memberships online, buy passes online, be able to tell your story so we can begin to capture these nostalgic, powerful tales that people have with the facility. I did also want to squeeze in, Rob, if it's okay, that the time and date of the event.
Oh, yeah.
So the From Grain to Growler documentary event is Saturday, October 18th. It starts at 4 p.m. The tasting's from 4 to 5 p.m. The documentary's from around 5 to 5:45. It's about 40 to 45 minutes long. And then we're going to have a moderated panel till around 6:15 or 6:30, talking to some of these instrumental people in the movement. What I wanted to talk about, too, is that the biggest, strongest thing that's happening for Roanoke during that weekend is the Go Festival. So this is something that supplements Go Festival. We're not in competition with Pete Eshelman. We're a big fan of them. So come on over in the afternoon and enjoy.
Thank you a lot. Ian Fortier.
Thanks, Rob.
Granite Theater, thanks for coming out. You listen to Community Conversations on 101.5 The Valley's Music Place.
101.5 The Valley's Music Place. Building community in Gainesboro, Norwich, and Round Hill.
You can get involved and start building community today with 101.5 The